This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. She was born into a family of rebels. Her mother was the first elected female governor of Texas in her own right. Her father, a civil rights attorney, and she began bucking the system in sixth grade when she refused to be forced to say the Lord's Prayer in school. Over a decade, we've known Cecile Richards as the president of Planned Parenthood, and at the beginning of the year, she announced she's leaving that post. She recently released a new book called Make Trouble: Standing Up, Speaking Out, and Finding the Courage to Lead My Life. It's a life story of Cecile Richards, and she joins us now on the State of Things. Welcome.
Thank you, Frank.
Great to have you here. I have to ask you, this got to be my first question, because you're stepping down, but, you know, you've got a Republican president and a Republican-led Congress all leading an attack on women's reproductive rights. Why would you choose to step down now from Planned Parenthood?
Well, I've had the honor of doing this job now for about 12 years, and it's an incredible organization, you know, provides health care to one in five women in this country. And I guess we've always, you know, there's always some fight we're in, and certainly this president has been no friend to Planned Parenthood. But we are, I think, stronger than we've ever been. And we actually beat back, as you know, the effort to defund Planned Parenthood last year and even the effort to repeal Obamacare. We have now more than 11.5 million supporters across the country. And I think it's important for those of us in the social justice movement that we step aside and make room for a new generation of leaders. And that's what I think I'm doing.
Let's start at the end of your book. You campaigned for Hillary Clinton. Your husband and adult children were all there on election night. And you talk about the personal and professional trajectory of your life, in a sense, changing in that moment. Tell us more.
Well, I think that people ask a lot. And the reason I actually wrote this book, Frank, was that after the election, when so many folks were just completely devastated, couldn't feel like they just didn't know what to do. And every day someone would stop me on the street saying, you know, what am I supposed to do? What, as if there was one certain thing they could do that would make it all go away or, you know, turn back the clock. And I realized it was like maybe a time to write a book to talk about both my own experiences, but also just be really a call to action for folks. And it has been amazing over this last year, even as people sort of sorted through the rubble and picked themselves up, that we have seen the most extraordinary outpouring of grassroots organizing that I've seen in my entire lifetime. And that's the work I've been doing for my whole life. So it's actually, I think, a really exciting and important moment in America.
Well, talk more about that. I wonder what it looks like to you. Again, and we'll get into some of the details, many of them in your new book, Make Trouble, about sort of how you came to this place. But you've done this kind of organizing most of your life. How is it different now? What is different about what you're seeing today than what you've seen leading up to this point?
Well, I think, I started in the labor movement. I've, you know, worked for Planned Parenthood for a long time. And a lot of this, you know, a lot of the work that I've done over my lifetime was organizers going out and engaging people and, you know, trying to say, hey, things are important. We can make change. And actually what I've been seeing this last 14 months in America is people just erupting all across the country, women, young people, people of color taking on issues, and in a way, national organizations running to kind of keep up with them. And that is what's really exciting. People aren't waiting to be asked. They're not waiting for permission. We're certainly seeing that with women running for office. You know, it used to be in my mother's day that women thought they had to have the perfect resume in order to run. And now we're seeing record numbers of people filing for office. And that to me is just that's something I haven't seen before, certainly not in my lifetime.
Let's talk about in your book, you Make Trouble. You have the details of a meeting that you had with the Trump family immediately after the election. I'd like you to tell us about that.
Well, I had gotten word through someone, and this is after the inauguration, that Ivanka Trump wanted to talk about Planned Parenthood. And of course, I was very aware that the president-elect and Congress had us keenly in their sights to get, you know, try to shut down our health centers. And so even though I was certainly with trepidation, I agreed to the meeting, and it turned out she was going to bring her husband, Jared Kushner. So I got my husband, Kirk, who's also an organizer, to come with me. And we met. And I thought, look, I'll go anywhere to explain to people about the great work that Planned Parenthood does. And I did that. We met. I told them about, you know, the millions of people who count on us for health care, particularly women in many parts of the country who have no other affordable health care provider. But as it turned out, really, and this was really Jared Kushner's push, was that he thought, well, if we would just quit providing abortion services to women in America, then he would get in touch with Paul Ryan and somehow secure funding for Planned Parenthood, which, you know, I just said, well, we're just not going to do that. I mean, that is not going to happen. And it really felt like it was some kind of political trade-off, and we just don't trade off the rights of women in America. So that was kind of the end of that, but I give more details in the book.
I wonder how that came across to you. I mean, is it some sense of it can be a threat, a bribe, some kind of political negotiation in that moment? How did that come across to you?
Well, I definitely felt like it. I mean, I wouldn't say it was a threat, but he was very clear. He said, look, the Republicans run everything. We've got the White House, we've got Congress. And so you've got to make a deal. And I just said to him, that's just not who Planned Parenthood is. We just don't make deals. We provide health care to millions of people. And of course, I wanted to lay out my case, but it seems like there's nothing more for us to say here. And basically, we left and then, of course, engaged hundreds of thousands of people across the country in an effort to protect access to Planned Parenthood and protect, frankly, millions of people in this country that have insurance coverage now through Obamacare. And fortunately, that was successful. But I think that all of our rights are at risk right now under this administration, and it is requiring enormous grassroots energy and activism to protect particularly the most vulnerable folks in the United States.
Well, and as you said, the threat may be more acute now, but it has always been there. And you have been credited with revitalizing Planned Parenthood. And I wonder how reproductive rights, this whole question, has advanced, do you think, since you began your work in 2006?
I do, Frank. And because I think it used to be that we talked about reproductive health care as like just in this kind of rights framework. But the truth is, and, you know, my mom, Ann Richards, who unfortunately has passed, but was here to see me take this job. And she said, no, Cecile, it's about women's health care. That's what it's about. And I feel like we have done a really good job of engaging our patients as being their own advocates, telling their own stories about how important this work is. And we have grown the organization. We've more than tripled in the last 10 years. And I think also engage folks not only in providing health care, but being a movement. And I think some of the progress that we've made, and certainly the progress under Obamacare for women, it didn't just benefit Planned Parenthood patients. It benefited millions of people across the country.
I wonder how you see these two things coming together, because you're certainly not the first observer who has noticed this swell of grassroots activity now. And again, it's hard to know how that's going to turn out, right? Because all the organizations, the nonprofits, they've staked their turf and everybody knows kind of where they are in the fight and whatever side mm-hmm. they're on. How do these two things play together, this long fight over decades for various kinds of civil and human rights in this country, fought mostly through nonprofits and organizations, and now this groundswell? How do you see? I mean, it seems like a pretty dynamic time, but also maybe a kind of a risky time about whether or not we see a continuum or things could crumble. I mean, how do you see this going forward?
Well, look, I just look at this last year when, of course, after the inauguration, the fact that the day after we saw the largest marches in the history of the United States is pretty amazing. That the women's marches, I mean, I think it just became a moment when everyone said, I just have to be there. And that wasn't just women. I mean, it was everyone. And then, of course, as an organizer, you think, but then what happens tomorrow? And what happened is that people then began going to town hall meetings. I mean, we had, Congress's switchboard was shut down time and time again by people calling. And some estimates are that 86% of the calls coming to Congress were from women. People began to run for office, all kinds of things. And then what we saw, which to me was really the telling sign, is that you saw, you know, African-American women in the state of Alabama lead to a victory for a Democrat in the United States Senate. You know, you saw in the state of Virginia, which is, of course, quite kind of a bellwether state, a gender gap of 22 points in the governor's race, the first transgender woman elected to the assembly, the first Latinas elected. So what I'm seeing is that women and others, but particularly women, are on fire. And they understand that it's not enough to march. It's not enough to, you know, call Congress and complain. You've got to get out there and actually vote. And I think we're going to see record turnout in November and, you know, potentially really change the direction of things.
I want to take you way back now. I'm talking to Cecile Richards, who is the head of Planned Parenthood now, the outgoing head. She'll be leaving soon. She's written a book called Make Trouble. And in this book, you talk about when you first began making trouble, which was middle school. Talk about those early days for you of protest.
Well, Frank, I grew up in Dallas, Texas. And as you said earlier, you know, my dad was a civil rights attorney. My mother was she was a homemaker, we called it in the time. But of course, she was also a woman who had her own mind. And honestly, my folks were just fighting against everything in Dallas. And any movement that came through town, they jumped into it. The farm workers and the labor movement. And then, of course, the women's movement. And so I think at an early age, I mean, it was kind of a magical childhood. I feel like I learned that that's what you did in your life. My first pivotal moment, I think, was when we moved to Austin. And in seventh grade, there was a moratorium against the war, and I decided to wear a black armband to my junior high school, even though I was new to school and really didn't know what anyone else would be doing. It turned out really not many others, if anyone, was wearing a black armband, and the principal called me to his office in seventh grade to complain to my mother, which, of course, was his first mistake. But it really was an interesting moment, and it's one I can remember just like it was yesterday, because here I was. All I was doing was wearing a black armband, but I suddenly am in the principal's office, and I didn't even know the principal. And I think it just kind of got me onto this road of realizing that sometimes if you look around and feel like something's wrong and something needs doing, maybe the person that needs to do something about it is you. And I, you know, have kind of been at it ever since.
We'll talk about being on the campaign trail with your mother, because she was formidable and she had quite an incredible reputation. A Democrat woman wins in the state of Texas, in the 1980s, I guess. And she was the first. There had been a woman elected, but she took over for her husband earlier in the century. So this is a landmark moment. But tell us about her and about being on the campaign trail with her and what effect that had on you.
Well, so for those who didn't know her, you know, Ann Richards was a she was a you list some of the things that were that were going against her becoming governor. She was a progressive. She was a feminist. And no one ever thought we could win. And it was one of these things where it was a total grassroots campaign. And of course, I recount a lot of my favorite memories on that campaign, because I did a lot of the small markets out in the countryside, like much like we have in states like North Carolina. Someone's got to go out and, you know, see small town America. And I was pregnant with twins. So, riding in the Luling Watermelon Thump parade pregnant with twins is pretty fun. Mm-hmm. But it was an amazing time. She spoke her mind. She was not one to hold back. And I think that her race, and the reason I talk about it in the book, is that I think it's actually very instructive, particularly for women who are running right now, where people give them no chance of winning. We never had a poll showing that she could win. And we, in fact, we did win on Election Day because of this outpouring of, you know, teachers and labor folks and civil rights leaders, farm workers, LGBTQ folks who had never had the chance to serve in state government in Texas. And it was that incredible sort of outpouring of grassroots energy that put us over the top. And that's, again, what I think I'm seeing for the first time. This is the first time I feel like that energy is back in this country. And it does show that it's important that we don't let our sort of practicality interfere with idealism. And this is a time for people to do more than they ever thought they could do.
Let me ask you about some of the choices you made in the book. You have three adult children now. And in the book and in the press, you've talked about that time when you and your husband were working more than 40 hours a week. You're raising three school-age children. You discover you're pregnant again. And then you go on record saying that your family has chosen an abortion. Why open yourself up to the personal attacks that certainly followed?
Well, I think it's really important, Frank, that we talk about abortion openly and directly. For too long, it's been something that's been in the shadows, even though many, many women, that's a decision they make in their lifetime. My story wasn't dramatic, you know, but it was my story. And I got to tell you, all across the country, women stop me in airports, on the street, and say thank you. Thank you for telling your story, because it made it easier for them to not feel ashamed, or that they could actually make a decision themselves and go on with the rest of their life. I never realized how important that was until I started working at Planned Parenthood. And I'm really proud in these last 12 years. I think that a lot has been done to begin to sort of take away the stigma that so many women have felt during their lifetime.
You're stepping away from Planned Parenthood. What's next?
I don't know. But, you know, I've been an organizer, a troublemaker my whole life, whether it was in the labor movement or the women's movement or in political campaigns. I know that as when I finish up in Planned Parenthood in May, I'll be spending all of my time focused on registering, engaging, and turning out voters for the November election, because there's nothing more important to me. And I feel like there is an enormous amount of energy out there. Folks are ready. I think folks are concerned about the direction of the country. And I think we have to make sure that people know that voting is the way to really change things.
What's the next hurdle, do you think, in reproductive rights?
Well, I do feel good about where the country is. I feel the support for Planned Parenthood actually has never been stronger. And in an interesting way, the support for Roe versus Wade is at its highest level ever. I think that we would be naive not to think that the Supreme Court fight, if there is a vacancy, is going to be an enormous battle in America, and not just for reproductive rights, for everything that we hold dear as folks who believe in social justice. So I think that working across a number of issue lines and organizational lines, it's going to be important that we bring everything we can to ensure that we have a Supreme Court that reflects the true diversity of this country and the majoritarian positions. Because this president, to me, and one of the most damaging things he has done is begin to restack the federal judiciary with people who are on the most extreme fringe of the Republican Party. And that's not good for democracy.
Which makes the 2018, the November elections, all the more important, I would suspect, in your light, and perhaps why you're going to work for candidates. But then the big question is, do you want to become a candidate?
Well, you know, never say never, but that's not my plan right now. I feel like I know already so many people who are running that need help and need support, and it'll be my honor to help help elect them in November. But who knows what the future holds?
How big a part do you think reproductive rights will play? You know, we just talked to Tom Perez a minute ago, chair of the Democratic National Committee, about, you know, where he thinks things are. And he's saying, look, it's the economy, it's health care. If we talk about jobs and we talk about health care, you know, we think we've got it knocked. Where is the reproductive rights question? Is it being lost in all this, or do you think it's going to be an important issue in the November elections?
I think it's going to be pivotal because, of course, reproductive rights, that is health care. And it's sort of funny how people separate these things out. And in fact, there's a number of folks in Congress who will say, well, you know, we want to talk about economic issues. Well, one of the most fundamental economic issues for women is to be able to decide when and whether to have children. And we've made such progress, but women are very aware of how fragile that progress is. You know, one of the things that we fought so hard for under President Obama was to get birth control covered for everyone in insurance plans. And as a result, today, more than 62 million women get that coverage at no copay. And it saved them money. And we're also now at a historic all-time low for teenage pregnancy. This is incredible progress as a public health good and an economic benefit for women. But they are keenly aware that this administration is trying to roll back both the access to birth control, access to maternity care, you know, things that are fundamental issues for women, regardless of their party. What we have found at Planned Parenthood is that folks are keenly focused on making sure that folks in office respect their right to choose their health care provider and that they don't take away their access to affordable care.
Cecile Richards is the president of Planned Parenthood. Her new book is called Make Trouble, Standing Up, Speaking Out, and Finding the Courage to Lead, My Life Story. Going to be at a ticketed event in McIntyre's Books in Pittsburgh, Sunday, April 15th. She'll be in conversation with University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill Women's and Gender Studies Professor Michelle Tracy Berger. Cecile Richards, what a pleasure. Thank you for talking with us.
Yeah, thank you, Frank.
There's more at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we'll talk about political changes that have made it hard to get international justice. We'll do it on the State of Things. Please stay with us.